much for joining us today. This is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse. And you can always find us at naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. We love to see you in person. We have a free newsletter that goes out every couple weeks or so. All you have to do is go to naturalnurse.com and type your email in the bottom, this little box that says free newsletter. It's on the left bottom side, I believe. And you just type in your email. No other questions, no cost, and no sales. We send information only. And we do send out all of our schedule, but you can also find the schedule by going to naturalnurse.com and just click on schedules, because we do both on-ground and online presentations really almost every single day. So many people are studying with our classes, which are certified, CE broker credit certified in those states that take CE brokers credits for acupuncturists, massage therapists, nurses, midwives, nutritionists. And if you are a licensed professional, you can get certified classes with us. In those states that don't take CE broker, you still can get an accreditation, and very often your state board will take that. And if you are not an accredited person and you're someone who's interested in learning natural therapies, you can join us for your classes, and then we send you a certificate. So they're in every single topic in natural medicine, with a heavy emphasis on using herbs and all different other classes. Also, we're beginning to teach quite a bit in terms of radionics and dowsing. I have been doing that for 45 years now, and more recently offering it to the public to learn how to do it for yourself, because then you can do things such as evaluate and intervene with various energetic abnormalities, which very often are sort of the best step towards being super, super healthy. So thank you again so much for joining us today. Our guest today is Dr. Valerie Ferdinand. She is a naturopathic physician and a licensed naturopathic physician with an integrative medicine practice in Portland, Oregon. And Dr. Ferdinand received her Bachelor of Science in Biochemistry and Micromolecular Biology and her doctorate at National College of Natural Medicine. And she works with various laboratories, is a presenter at multiple conferences and webinars, and she discusses topics concerning genetic health, which is a very big up-and-coming topic that every healthcare provider will need to get information about and begin to use in determining what would be best for a particular individual. Her contact information is woodstockclinic.com. And thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Valerie.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, you are a busy young woman, because it's really hard to
track
you down.
That is putting it mildly, yes.
And it's wonderful, because you know, you have the energy to offer individuals all this information, and your background is really evidence-based biochemistry.
Yes, it is, and I'm very blessed to be able to go out and intermingle with my colleagues and really bring them this information that they want to know more about.
And you're going to bring it to our audience today, so they'll have some new vocabulary.
I hope this is going to be a very riveting and informative hour, and everybody walks away with a little pearl of knowledge.
Well, thank you. So let's go back in time to yourself being a young girl. And, you know, I also, as a young girl, a lot longer ago than you, though, was totally interested in science, which is the usual path for girls. So what led you down that path?
You know, it was just a natural inquisition. I just was so fascinated with absolutely everything around me. But my mother was a nurse, and so she was always teaching me what she knew. I remember distinctly asking my mother one day why I had green eyes and why she had brown eyes. And she sat down and wrote out like a chi-square of like, so if your father gives you this DNA and your mother gives you this DNA, they intermingle, and that's why you have the eyes that you have. So it was really just part of my growing up. It was something that was fostered through my parents and something that I just naturally gravitated to through their guidance.
And then probably throughout school you excelled, I am sure.
Yeah.
Especially in the sciences. Yeah.
Oh yeah. No, I was in the advanced tracks throughout pretty much the majority of my schooling, and left high school with a year of college under my belt. So it was something that I just had a natural affinity to.
So, well, thank you so much for pursuing your life dream.
And yes,
you've got experience.
You know what? I count myself as one of the lucky ones who's been able to.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you first went for biochemistry and micromolecular biology, which is a fascinating topic in and of itself, and could have led to any number of outcomes in terms of career choices. But what made you gravitate towards naturopathic medicine?
You know, it was just kind of one of those aha moments. I mean, and with a biochemistry and a micromolecular degree, of course, I mean, I was trying to stack my cards towards a traditional medicine education. And I was just kind of sitting with my thoughts one day and realized, that's not what I want. The way I view human health is I view it much more holistically. I see where nutrition comes into a factor, and I've had exposure to supplements prior to that, and I've seen the wonderful work that they can do. And it's not that I don't believe in pharmaceuticals. I use pharmaceuticals in a safe and responsible manner every single day. But I do not feel that it should be our only option. And so I pursued naturopathy because it really is the marriage of both. It brings in the traditional medicines of nutrition, supplements, hydrotherapy, lifestyle changes, etc., but then also, when appropriate, intermingles pharmaceutical medication so that our patients get the best, most personalized care.
Absolutely, and the most evidence-based care, I might add. Now, I want to make one comment about the use of the word traditional.
Yeah, I think I used it
on this.
Two different ways.
Yes,
sorry about that.
That's okay. We'll forgive you. But I'm going to bring it up just for our audience because I'm a stickler about this.
Oh, yeah.
In that the word traditional should be used for therapeutics that have a very long and ancient history of safe and effective use, like you talked about the second time you said it, such things as herbal medicine, hydrotherapy, you know, the whole body-mind connection is well recognized even in Chinese medicine thousands of years ago. So there's lots of fantastic traditional medicines. But when I'm talking about conventional medicine, which is also, as you say, very, very useful and the correct choice at times, however, it is not traditional. It's what we can call conventional, allopathic, modern medicine, because usually those therapeutics, particularly the pharmacological agents, don't usually stick around too long. They don't usually have hundreds of years of a safe and effective profile. So I'm just, you know, that's just one of my things. So
I realized it after I said it. I was like, wait a minute, that's not the word that I meant to choose. So actually, I appreciate you clarifying that.
Well, great. And so now, you know, we're on the same page about that. And let's move into your topic specialty, because here's a word that I am sure many doctors and certainly many of our listeners do not know, and that's pharmacogenetics.
Correct. Pharmacogenetics, it is one of the most fascinating aspects of genetic healthcare right now. It's really set and poised to revolutionize how we are delivering medications to our patients.
And, you know, so what is it?
So what it is basically it is the analysis of how your body can actually respond to various different medications and if that medication is even a correct choice for you. And if it is a correct choice for you, can we get some insight as to what dose would be appropriate for you?
So I want to bring up something, and I'm wondering if you're familiar with it, because it's not the first time, actually, we have decided to scientifically look into that. One of the early movements in this was actually brought to bear through a blood test science. It was a specificity blood test developed by Rudolf Steiner and worked on by Ehrenfeld Pfeiffer. And I have been very, very big in using this. And what they did, I'm sure you'll find it interesting, is they took a blood sample and then they added to the blood sample And this was actually done in hospitals in the United States until the 1940s, when the pharmaceutical industry basically took over medicine. And then they added to the blood sample a agent, such as a pharmaceutical drug, or even a more natural traditional treatment, which was still being used at those times by the eclectic physicians, like herbs. And then they would allow the blood to dry, and they actually were able to look at the blood pattern. And if it was a very smooth, regular kind of crystalline pattern, that would indicate that that was the correct agent for that person. And if instead they got a very jagged, non-harmonious outcome in the crystallization, they would know that is not for that patient. And then they correlate it with real-life reactions. So it
fascinating. I don't know that I've stumbled across that. But
well,
I mean,
there's always more to learn. I've been doing this 50 years. But now what
just
you're
thinking
talking about is
the,
a much
the natural
higher
inflammatory
level.
Patterns of the blood. I mean, that, I think that was just light years ahead of its time, but it was so scientifically based. I think that's phenomenal and fascinating.
Yeah, I'll send you the book. It's called Crystal Sensitization, that they wrote a whole book on their research, and it was well documented. But in any event, now we're coming back to actually looking at an individualizing treatment through this very advanced study of pharmacogenetics. And you are really, I guess it's called pharmacogenomics.
They're a bit intermingled. There's a slight differentiation, but you know the two words get used interchangeably quite frequently.
And you know, I've been a colleague of Jeffrey Bland's for so many decades, and I know you know he's been talking about this a lot as well. And where I found you is you were actually doing a presentation about this at a conference.
Yes, yeah, I was down in Atlanta and had done a lovely presentation on this, and it was very well received by a lot of the docs there because this is just stuff that they want. This is the, when you see patients that come in with a laundry list of medications that they just do not respond to well, like I'm sensitive to 30-plus different medications, we need to be looking deeper because there's something physiologically getting in the way of them tolerating what is a traditional dose in these medications.
That's so true. So how, you know, tell us about this new test. I mean, can anyone just order it or the special laboratories? When would a doctor decide to do it? And, of course, most doctors don't even know about it.
Yeah, no, I mean, right now, to my understanding, for the most part, it's run through a provider. There's a couple of different ways that you can get some of this information without utilizing a provider, but it's a little bit more challenging to try and interpret what that information means, whereas the reports that your doctor can acquire comes interpreted for you, comes with a good understanding of what the results mean. And so basically, what this process would consist of is going to your provider, submitting either a blood, a salival, a salivary, or what is referred to as a buccal swab sample, where you just remove a couple of skin cells from the inside of the cheek with basically a cotton swab. And then they send it in, and at the laboratory, the lab will check your DNA for certain polymorphisms, which just means a slight alteration in the DNA that would cause a change in the enzyme system of the body that's responsible for metabolizing these medications. And through an understanding, if a person has these polymorphisms, if they have this reduced ability or, in some cases, increased ability to metabolize these medications, your doctor can now take that information to choose if a medication is right for you and what dosing should be selected.
Now, does this only work with pharmacological agents such as pharmaceuticals, or can you do this also for more natural supplements?
You know, more and more companies are offering information about supplements, things like St. John's Wort, of course, because we've heard about that in many different contexts about how it interacts with various different medications and changes how the body responds to them. So St. John's Wort is one that can easily be reported upon. There's a few others that are coming out as well. And each and every day as we're learning more and more about how the body metabolizes supplements and metabolizes herbs, we're getting more information that can be put into the context of pharmacogenomic testing. Because, I mean, herbs are wonderful, but people still have sensitivity to those as well. And so if this allows us to also get a better understanding of what herbs a person is going to respond to, I think that's really the next level to pharmacogenomics. I'm eagerly awaiting all of that information to trickle down.
Yeah, it is important. And one of the things I teach all over the country is herb-drug interactions,
yes,
which is becoming more and more important because years ago, there was a real split. First of all, go back in time long enough and everyone only used herbs because that's all there was. Then as the pharmaceutical agents became the choice intervention in mainstream medicine, very few people used herbs. Really, mm-hmm, it was considered more of a fringe, and I was in that fringe. And so the people who used herbs really didn't use drugs. Like my own children who are in their 40s now never, ever were given any kind of pharmaceutical agent, never. You know, colds and flus, whatever they got, we dealt with it with herbs. And I, you know, they went to their pediatrician once a year, and they actually never were vaccinated either. So that was where I was at, sort of on one side. And then yeah, people who used pharmaceutical agents would never think of using herbs like echinacea for a cold or flu. They would take whatever their doctor gave them. So there wasn't too much of an integration. That actually happened on a specific date because 2020, I believe it was 1997, did a special on St. John's Wort, which you mentioned, and about positive studies looking on its effect on depression. And the next day, people flooded health food stores who had never been in there. And, of course, they were using things incorrectly. They just would try to dump their Prozac and take St. John's Wort instead,
oh, yeah,
which is not how we do it, as you know, as
yeah,
a naturopath. But St. John's Wort is one of those, as is milk thistle, that milk thistle so vastly interferes with the P450 liver enzyme system that helps to detoxify substances that it can actually change the blood level of a pharmaceutical that someone needs to their
exact,
detriment.
And that's the exact system that we're talking about when we're talking about pharmacogenomics, is the P450 detox system, because it handles the medication of pretty much all those medications that run through the liver. So, of course, milk thistle is going to be a huge player in that. And off the top of my head, I'm not quite sure which of the enzymes it affects, but I would wager it's probably going to have a hand in a couple of them. So, yeah, that would give us great insight as to if the milk thistle is increasing, which I would assume it is increasing, in the enzymatic activity. And if we have an individual that has an altered metabolism status in that particular enzyme, what does that mean for them for their medication goals? Are they going to be able to hit the therapeutic level that they and their provider are trying to achieve?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It does upregulate the detoxification enzymes, so makes them more active, which sounds good, except not when it's important for someone,
yeah,
to keep those drugs in a particular range. So that's very important additional information.
Well, and then with the pharmacogenomic testing, you can identify those individuals that already have a very high metabolism status. And so if we are now introducing milk thistle into that system, we've just amped up a system that's already amped up. And that in some cases can actually be dangerous.
Exactly. So it's so wonderful that you're bringing this much higher level of knowledge to your practice and, of course, sharing it with other practitioners through you offering webinars and seminars about it.
Yeah, all that information is ready to be used, and I just want everybody to know about it so that way they know that they can bring it into their practice, or from the patients, they know they can approach their providers and say, hey, since I have this history and since I am on medications, is this something I should be considering?
Now, that is great because hopefully providers, even who are not regularly using natural therapeutics, should be open to learning more.
Exactly.
Because if they're not,
exactly,
you know, I always tell people, well, who exactly is the employer and who's the employee, right? So in the doctor-patient relationship, the patient is the employer and the doctor is the employee. So if you don't have an employee who's willing to work with you, you really should fire them.
That's definitely one way of looking at it. The money that comes in through a medical practice comes in just because of the patients that they're able to serve. So the patient needs to feel empowered in the fact that they can ask for things and they can help to direct the course of their own care.
Yeah, it's so true. It's so true. So now let's talk a little bit more about, we're going to take a break right here because then we can get into the discussion deeply about what these tests actually look at, where should someone go to get it, what maybe, like you said, they can work with their doctor could sign up so that the doctor can offer it, how does it physically happen, and what do some of the reports look like why is this useful information. So we're just going to take a little break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, and when we come back, we are going to continue our fascinating discussion with Dr. Valerie Ferdinand, and we will be talking about pharmacogenetics, the prescription medication puzzle. And we will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of the Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss the ancient Chinese science and art of acupuncture.
Acupuncture is a 5,000-year-old medical procedure involving insertion and manipulation of needles into specific points on the body. It is often applied to relieve pain during surgery and for many other conditions.
Acupuncture needles have been found in China that are over 4,000 years old. The first needles were made of stone. Later, bronze, gold, or silver was used, and today they are usually made from steel. Acupuncture was developed around the theory of special meridian points on the body connected to the internal organs, and that vital energy, or qi, flows along these meridians. According to this theory, diseases are caused by interrupted energy flow, and the stimulation of these points restores normal energy circulation. There is some scientific evidence of the existence of the meridians as a separate circulatory system. Studies were done in the 1970s by a Dr. Kim from Korea, where he injected radioactive dyes into the traditional acupuncture points. He observed migration of the dyes along the exact predicted path of the meridians.
Okay. How acupuncture works remains uncertain, but both Western and Eastern scientific studies on rabbits have shown that the analgesic effects are not simply a matter of suggestion. After the discovery in 1975 of endorphins, natural pain inhibitors in the body, some neurophysiologists suggested that the needles may trigger the release of these substances. American and Chinese studies have confirmed that placing acupuncture needles in the brains of dogs raises the level of endorphins in the spinal fluid.
Acupuncture is used today in most hospitals in China and by many private practitioners in virtually every country in the world, including the United States. The primary use is for analgesia, although ulcers, hypertension, asthma, and other conditions have been documented to respond favorably to this treatment. Chinese surgeons prefer acupuncture to the use of drug-induced analgesia because they claim it does not disturb normal body physiology and therefore does not make the patient vulnerable to shock. Brain surgery is especially amenable to this form of analgesia when it is necessary to keep the patient awake during the operation.
Although some modifications in the practice of acupuncture have been made, such as sometimes using a small electric current on the needle instead of the traditional twirling, acupuncture remains intact as an ancient therapeutic technique that has been used successfully for at least 5,000 years. Perhaps you'd like to add this piece of knowledge to your natural medicine chest. We'll be right back.
Welcome back once again to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z right here on Progressive Radio Network. We love bringing you this show right here on Progressive Radio Network because you can listen anytime, day or night. We're here with our wonderful guest today, Dr. Valerie Ferdinand. And if you're enjoying this show, want to listen to it again or tell your friends to, you can go anytime to prn.fm, then scroll down to N for Natural Nurse, click on that, and this show will be archived shortly after our live broadcast today. So that's true with all of the shows on Progressive Radio Network. In addition, if you'd like to get in touch with myself or Dr. Eugene Zamperone, you can contact us at naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. And we love to hear your comments. And thank you for downloading and listening to our shows. We have over about 150,000 podcast listeners for this show. We're really, really happy about that. So thank you for your input by participating as a listener. Today, as our guest, is Dr. Valerie Ferdinand, and she is a licensed naturopathic physician. Her office is in Portland, Oregon, and she's a frequent presenter, and I'm sure will be even more so as time goes on, at multiple conferences and webinars, with a specific focus right now on genetic health, a new and up-and-coming science. So thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Valerie.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, should we talk about this particular lab, Kashi Health, or just the testing in general?
We can do either. I mean, Kashi Health is a lab that's I'm affiliated with, and so I'm very familiar with their testing practices. But pharmacogenomics is offered through multiple different labs. So just to be fair, there are multiple options in the consumer marketplace.
Okay, and that's good to know. So we're going to be talking about the genetic testing, and then one of the many places people can look into to get this kind of testing is Kashi Health.
Correct.
That's fine. So let's now get more specific. What is this testing done for?
So what this testing is done for is for individuals, like I'd said earlier, who have a pretty strong history of sensitivity to medications, or if you've had some sort of health event and your provider is considering putting you on medications, this is a really wonderful way to ensure that those medications are safe before we even introduce them to the body. If we can avoid and prevent adverse medication events from happening before we even start the medication process, not only does that make everybody healthier, but it's going to make it easier for people to want to stick with those medications that in some cases they may need to be on for quite a while. So it's just there's multiple different ways that a provider may look at it, but if they're having issues with getting a really good response from the medications that a patient is on and they want to look a little bit deeper and see if maybe they should be choosing a different medication. There's lots of different reasons why a provider or a patient may request this type of testing, but ultimately it all boils down to more effective medication care.
Now, I have heard about this. It seems to also be an up-and-coming procedure in some of the more advanced cancer therapeutics.
Yes.
You don't have to have such a serious disease to use this, but that's a place where they're actually on TV. You know, Centers of America says they do that.
I mean, particularly when it comes to genetics, I think that in many ways, the cancer arena, genetics gets accepted a little bit faster than it does in various other things like a cardiovascular clinic. It's because it's just we're racing the clock. And so they really want to capitalize on anything that's going to get them that information faster. And when we're dealing with the medications of cancer therapy, and we're talking about kind of the tippy top of toxicity there. So anything to really target that therapy is something that they're going to be gravitating to. But that doesn't mean that pharmacogenomic testing and medication selection isn't available at all levels of patient care spectrum.
And doesn't it make sense? Because it's going to really, just like we do in holistic medicine all the time, we are always interested in really individualizing care to the patient,
yes,
not to the disease.
Oh, yes. And I think this really brings it home into the medication sphere. I mean, when you're looking to put a patient on a medication, there's essentially a standard of care and a basic protocol that you follow to put a patient on that medication. But that doesn't mean that everybody is going to respond that way. And so through doing the pharmacogenomic testing, you can get an understanding of what your metabolizer status is. And I think I've used that term a couple of times. So I just kind of, if I may, I just want to talk about what that means.
Please do.
And so when you are doing this testing, what you're looking for is identifying in the various different enzymes what type of metabolizer you are. So most pharmacogenomic testing looks at roughly 4 or 5 different enzymes. Hold on, kids. This is going to sound a whole lot like letters and numbers for just a second here. So what we're looking at is the cytochrome P450 system, and in that system there's multiple enzymes, but the majority of medications are metabolized by just a handful. They are going to be enzymes 2D6, 2C9, 2C19, and 3A4, 3A5. Sorry, I know that gets a little bit confusing. But what we're doing with the testing is we're looking at the genes and through that understanding a better activity in the enzyme and assigning a person a metabolizer status. So a normal metabolizer will come up with the genes that we expect to find there, and that's going to be referred to as either a normal or an extensive metabolizer. Now there's 3 different other categories that a person could potentially fall into. The next least dangerous is an intermediate metabolizer. An intermediate metabolizer has a slightly reduced ability to metabolize medications. One that's going to be more problematic is going to be an individual who has different polymorphisms that causes them to be a poor metabolizer. So these people have virtually no ability to metabolize the medications in that particular enzyme if they have the various polymorphisms or lack thereof that are going to dramatically reduce the enzymatic activity. Now, on the complete other side of this spectrum is what's referred to as an ultra-rapid metabolizer. These individuals may have either multiple copies of a gene or they may have certain polymorphisms in the gene that make that gene speed up how quickly the body is metabolizing medication. And that can, with some medications, make it so that you are exposed to a too high of a level of toxic elements. And with other medications, it may be that your body's just running through them way too quickly. And so you're never going to capitalize on what you're trying to achieve. So that's just a quick background on what we're doing with looking at the enzymes and really translating that into how well that individual can metabolize those medications.
Could you just, again, tell our listeners what is a polymorphism, since that was
used? Oh, yes, my apologies. So a polymorphism is a spot in the sequence of your DNA that is what we're basically analyzing. And we have two options there. There may be what we expect to find in nature, so it's a normal polymorphism, or there's going to be an alteration, and now we're looking at something that infers some sort of health effect. And in this situation, either a reduced or an increased enzyme activity level.
And so it's basically a change. It's like a change in the DNA, which people, it's very normal. This happens all the time, one way or another.
There's various different tests that you can run in the marketplace to look at your entire genetics and look for these polymorphisms. And when you look at it like this company does, you'll see so many polymorphisms come back. But the fact is, the vast majority of them really are very benign. I mean, what makes the slight differences between me and you and how we appear to the world, that's going to be just an accumulation of those polymorphisms throughout the genetic code, just the little changes that make me me and make you you. But research has shown when we're looking at specific genes and we look at specific polymorphisms, there is a health change there, and we can use that information to inform our health journey.
Now, I also want to talk about something that I really think should be, first of all, I completely believe that this kind of testing and many other kinds of testing should be what we call standard of practice. Because
yes.
by doing these tests, we can do better integrative, individualized medicine and also decrease adverse events for a patient. So it should be completely done, I think, on all people all the time.
I completely agree with you.
And a lot of them you don't have to do again, right? Because they're not likely to change over time.
Well, that's the beauty of genetic testing. If we actually were to run these tests when we're born, we would have this information throughout our entire lifespan because the genes don't change. The expression of the genes changes over time, and the various different ways that the body modifies the genes can change over time, but the sequence itself and the results that we get through this testing will be the exact same from the if you were 1 year old or if you're 91 years old.
That's another wonderful reason. Now, let's talk about one of the tests specifically, which I usually have every single patient get, whether they're well or they're complaining of some health issue, and that's the MTHFR.
Yes.
And why don't you explain to us, what is that about?
MTHFR is probably one of the most informative gene markers that we have right now because it touches upon so many different health systems, and I love the fact that you're running that with so many of your patients. I think that's phenomenal. MTHFR is, an enzyme in the body that takes the folate that we provide to the body and activates it so that it can go around and touch upon various different other systems in the body and really kind of activate them. What we see in individuals that have a deficiency in MTHFR, which is very easily identified through genetic testing, we see a myriad of different health issues. A lot of the research in MTHFR was originally in homocysteine levels and how that pertains to heart health, because it can have a very direct influence on homocysteine levels. And if those levels get out of hand, then we can have various different cardiovascular outcomes. We can have brain health issues, things like that. But unfortunately, it doesn't stop right there. We're seeing it associated with fertility issues. We're seeing it associated with autism. We're seeing it associated with Parkinson's disease. We're seeing it associated with depression. We're seeing it associated with so many things. And it's such a simple thing to fix. It truly is. I mean, it's just a series of very inexpensive, easily accessible supplements that you can work with your provider to customize dosing on. And this test, like you said, really should be run on almost everybody.
Now, so I just want to clarify a little bit.
We can slow down the progression of so many disorders by understanding this information.
I want you to just go back a little bit because so more people will understand how simple this is, because folate is a form of B vitamin. You know, folic acid, they talk about that's what's in a lot of supplements, although it might not be the best form for the body, but just so people can relate to what you're talking about with folate.
Right.
And then there's normally mechanisms in the body, if everything is working fine, which is called methylation, and that's a very important process in many, many metabolic milieus in the body. So in this particular one, if there's a methylation insufficiency, it means your body cannot fully change the vitamin B that you're taking in into a usable form.
Correct.
If you say that's true. So therefore, we have to modify the form of the B vitamins that we're using.
Exactly. And it's so important to be able to have this system working appropriately. So many people are walking around not aware that their system isn't ideally functioning. And we could slow down the progression of multiple different disorders just by the understanding of this one gene.
Yeah, and it's such a simple test. How we do it is just a swab. You know, just it's kind of like a Q-tip, let's say, for people to visualize. And it's just rubbed against the inside of the mouth. It's nothing. There's no needles. It takes seconds. And there's no reason to not want to know. It's not like you won't get a job if someone finds out, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, no, and if you did know it, you would just be able to institute very simple therapies that'll give you a little bit more energy. I mean, that's a wonderful thing, and you'll be able to really improve the trajectory of your health.
So what kind of things would you do clinically if you find someone that has a genotype, an MTHFR genotype that is not favorable for methylation?
So the first things that we do is we get them started on the active folate, is we get them started on the methylfolate to be able to replace that which the body cannot properly generate. But we also need to make sure that they're taking the rest of the B-complex as well, and I like to provide it in an active form, so that way we're really helping to support the entire pathway that MTHFR is kind of feeding into, because even though it is one gene, it's connected to many other different enzymes, and so we want to make sure that that whole system is spinning like a properly tuned bicycle, and so we provide all the active B complexes to really push that forward. Then we talk, and that's the thing with the active folate is the biggest thing that I hear from docs is, well, I just put all my patients on active folate. And that's not always going to be the best strategy, particularly
really?
If you're dealing
with really,
really, really
high
doses.
That was my next question for you. Yeah,
yeah.
Dr. Valerie, because why not just use that all the time for everyone if it's a more easily accessible form?
Because if your body is functioning appropriately and then it has other burdens put upon it, it can actually cause symptoms if we provide active folate, particularly at relatively high doses. And I love people, but sometimes people decide, they're like, well, if a little bit is good, more is obviously going to be better. And sometimes that can really get you into a health kind of sticky situation. And we see symptoms when people have too much active folate of migraines, tummy issues, and skin issues. And so that's why we want to look at this testing before we give them the active folate, because we can get a better understanding of what dose we should be giving them.
Very interesting, because as I'm sure you know, years ago this knowledge was a little bit more relegated to only practitioners, like when we started using it in our clinic, which is really many decades ago. But now on the regular health food store shelf, you see methylated products, both in methylcobalamin, which is B12, and also the folate with the methylated forms being obviously available over the counter. So many people think that's the best choice for them. And this is actually the first time I've heard anyone say it may not be the best choice for you.
You know, when you deal with enough patients and you see that they actually, their anxiety increases, their migraines increase, they all of a sudden have hives because they're on too many methylated products, that's when you start to be like, huh, we need to be a little bit more judicious in how we're using these products, so that way we're really giving that tailored dose. We're giving the dose that's going to be safest for them, but also effective.
So that patient who does not have a methylation issue, it might be best for them to just use the regular form or just not take supplements and get it from their food. What would you say is the best way to go?
If you do not have any polymorphisms, still choose a multivitamin that has folate as opposed to folic acid, because I agree with you. I'm not a huge fan of folic acid. And really just get folate from your diet through those green leafy vegetables and legumes, because your body's working well on its own, and it's going to be able to generate that active folate. And if we bring too much of the methyl-containing products into the system, it might upset the system a little bit. But of course, talk with your doctor. I mean, there's other polymorphisms to look at outside of MTHFR that we may still need to incorporate methylation products to ensure the process is performing correctly. But you don't just jump in at the deep end of active folate, because it could, in some individuals, cause some symptoms.
Wow, that is great, and I think new information for many people. Well, we're going to take another little break right here on The Natural Nurse. And Dr. Z, listeners, you are listening to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z right here on Progressive Radio Network. Our fascinating guest today is Dr. Valerie Ferdinand, licensed naturopathic physician, you want to find her, this show will be posted on the site shortly after today. And her website is woodstockclinic.com. And also, if you want to take a deeper look at these tests, you can go to kashihealth.com. That's KASHI health.com. So we will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
Your best choice for voices outside the mainstream. PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.
This is Guy McPherson. Join me and Mike Sliva with Nature Bats Last Radio on PRN.FM. Catch us Tuesday evening at 8 p.m. on the East Coast. You can rate the show on iTunes, and if you don't catch us live, you can catch us 24/7 in the PRN archives. That's 8 p.m. Eastern Time with Nature Bats Last on PRN.FM.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Normally, you would hear the Progressive Commentary Hour Monday evenings, 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. However, as of today, we're going to be having it every Tuesday, 7 to 8 p.m. So just change your calendar, please. Change your schedule. Tuesday, 7 to 8 for the Progressive Commentary Hour.
The story behind the story, your story, my story, it's all in the mix on Lead Stories right here on PRN.FM. This is Utrice Lead inviting you to share your thoughts and opinions and expand your knowledge about critical issues of the day, Monday through Friday, right after Gary Knoll's show. Listen live to a broadcast or get Lead Stories whenever you want from PRN's archive. You can even rate the show on iTunes. Now pass the word. Tell this story to everyone you know. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
This is PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.
Thank you so much for joining us. This is Ellen Kamai at naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. Those are the best ways to send your comments. And, of course, we love the accolades and everyone saying they love everything. That's great. But if there's something you want to complain about, we'd like to hear that, too, because we love to get feedback from our many listeners. So thank you so much for joining us for today's show. Pharmacogenetics, the Prescription Medication Puzzle, with Dr. Valerie Ferdinand, who is an expert on this topic. So, Dr. Ferdinand, thank you so much for being our guest today.
Thank you for having me.
Now, here's an interesting panel that I think many people might be interested in, like they've tried everything to lose weight, and it hasn't happened. Yet there is actually a panel available of genetic markers that can help individualize exactly which program which would work for that person. How does that work?
Oh, well, you've stumbled across our weight management panel. So what we're looking at there is we're looking at five different markers that if you have the presence of the polymorphism that we talked about earlier, that individual change in the sequence of the DNA that can infer a health outcome. If individuals have various different polymorphisms in these genes, they may not be able to tolerate certain food groups as easily, and they may not be able to they may not be able to get as much advantage out of exercise. They may not be able to have as high of a metabolism. And the really rough one is they may not be able to have their body turn off those hunger cues as appropriately. So what we do is we look for these polymorphisms, and our scientific team has come up with a really good approach to how to individualize how many carbohydrates you should be eating, how much fat you should be eating, how much protein you should be eating, and how often you should be eating to really get better health weight loss results.
So maximize it according to a person's genetic structure. Now, people may be familiar with, and I'm sure you are, that this was recognized many, many decades ago, let's say in Native Americans, who actually had a different genetic structure because when they had lived on the land, there was sort of a feast or famine. And then when that wasn't the case anymore, they really have massive amounts of overweight and diabetes because it was a different set point.
Yeah, and that's part of what we're looking at here is we're looking at those conservation measures that the body has put into place over time and how in a different environment this may have been advantageous. But in our current environment where there's fast food on every third corner and there's constant visual and auditory stimuli about eat, 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 some individuals are just more sensitive and are going to be more receptive to those cues and are going to run into issues with controlling that willpower and controlling that ability to withstand the McDonald's temptation or something of that nature. So what we're looking at here is really giving them an understanding of why they're having the issues that they are, how they can change their dietary structure to get better results, and in the very near future, our reports are going to change to actually include supplement recommendations that the research has shown can improve these dispositions in patients.
So let me just ask you this. Are these kinds of tests covered by health insurance, or do people need to pay for them out of pocket?
At this time, insurance is not covering genetic testing all that much. Sometimes things like MTHFR and pharmacogenomics is covered, but things like the weight management panel, unfortunately, in many cases is not being covered. You may be able to make a case to your insurance provider if you have pretty profound obesity or a family history of type 2 diabetes, but insurance is not 100% on board with genetics right now.
And or with any natural therapies either. So.
Yeah. So, and we're seeing, I mean, in the last couple of years, our insurance landscape has changed quite a bit, and we're seeing a lot of kind of the trickle-down effects of that. And unfortunately, genetics is kind of being swept to the side as something that insurance company doesn't want to spend their money on at this time.
Which is so silly, because from a cost-benefit ratio, it's a phenomenal test to include.
Exactly.
None of my patients ever complain. You know, we give them the option, and if they pay for it out of pocket, they're feeling that they're getting so much information that they're actually going to be spending less on drugs. They're going to feel better. So it really is a cost saving either way.
Yeah, it very, very much is. And I mean, it's also, wouldn't you rather put a little bit of money into it now to avoid those health issues in the future? I mean, I know I've taken medications before that I've had a bad response to, and if we've been able to avoid that from the beginning, would have been just lovely.
Because it's looking at possible sensitivities, and then you don't even have to take the drug and get a negative response. You just don't take it.
Exactly. And then with the weight management, I mean, we have individuals that struggle with that their entire lives. And there's definitely health outcomes from individuals who carry too much body weight. So if we can really give them tools and strategies to regain control over that. And the thing that I think is the most fascinating about it is it really takes all the guesswork out of which diet is right for me. Because if you go to the grocery store and you just look at the magazines, every week, there's a different type of diet that's guaranteed to lose you 10 pounds by Sunday. And it's, so there's a lot of visual noise that people get confused what truly is the right diet for me, because all these experts are making all these recommendations, when really the right diet that's right for you is the one that your body needs, and that's where the genetics really comes in handy.
Yeah, and it's so different for each person, and it doesn't change. So at any point,
exactly,
if you invest in getting some of the genetic markers done, that's the same information then that you can use for the rest of your life.
Exactly. And so you don't have to be, should I be a low-fat person? Should I be a paleo person? Your genes will tell you which one of those people you're gonna respond better to, and you can just stick with that for the rest of your life. You don't have to try the different fad diet every month. You can just stick with what you know your body likes.
That is fantastic. So there's so much to know, and, you know, a very simple thing, like if somebody has a gene, let's say, for breast cancer, like Angelina Jolie actually promoted many people knowing about that, one of the things we know is specifically increasing detoxification. Eating a lot of cabbage can tend mm-hmm. to silence that gene.
Yep.
What a fantastic and inexpensive intervention.
Exactly. And it's just, knowledge is power. And when you know, I mean, that's how I view genetic testing, is this, it doesn't mean you're going to get breast cancer. It means you have a higher risk of getting breast cancer. But the future is not determined. But with that understanding of that higher risk, you can put in all of those supports to really reduce that risk. Like you said, with the cabbage, with the broccoli, with various different other detoxification strategies, with understanding where your risk lies, you can really change that path for yourself. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you for all your work with genetic testing and for bringing this information not only to the public but to healthcare providers. We're actually at the end of our time, so please give out the best way for people to contact you.
So the best way to contact me is Dr. Valerie, DrValerie, at woods.clinic.com. I'm happy to field questions from patients, providers alike, because I understand genetics is new to most individuals, and I just really want people to have a better understanding of how it fits into their life.
Well, thank you so much. You're a wonderful guest.
Oh, thank you again so much for having me. I've had such a lovely time.
Good. Have a great day. And
you
thank
too.
You for getting up early, because I know you're a West Coast girl like my son. He lives in Seattle. So thank you for that. And thank you, listeners, for joining us once again for another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. If you'd like to know more about genetic testing, get in touch with Dr. Valerie. You can also find her at woodstockclinic.com, and then there's a contact there so you can get your message directly to her. Come back and listen to the show again to learn more. Tell your friends and family to listen to the show. It will be on prn.fm under Natural Nurse. Until next time, this is Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse, at naturalnurse.com or Facebook The Natural Nurse, wishing you the best. Stay healthy.